Now, as we mentioned earlier, the Irish Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has launched an urgent appeal named Stop the Pain in response to a sharp increase in the number of animal cruelty cases. Now, I know when we read that headline, many of you were upset to hear it. So we have to face these issues to find solutions, don't we? Dr. Cyril Sullivan is CEO of the ISPCA and joins us on the programme now. Cyril, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it greatly.
I suppose the ISPCA believes we're in the midst of a national crisis with animal welfare. A number of animal shelters across the country are faced so many animals coming their way that they've decided that they're full. They don't have resources and have had to shut up shop. In ISPCA's situation, the number of animals, particularly dogs, we took in last year, for the whole year, for the full 12 months, we're facing that number as of today. So we're not even halfway through the year and we're already exceeding that number. So as far as ISPCA is concerned, we're in the midst of a national crisis. We're in the midst of a national crisis on animal welfare. And hence, we've had no choice but to launch a national appeal. And just in terms of some background to that, we within the ISPCA decided, well, our objective is to save animals from cruelty. We receive between 10 and 15,000 calls a year into our helpline and in Longford, and about 3,000 of those end up in inspections. When the numbers started to grow, the board, a very passionate group of animal welfare folk, the senior management team of the team, we're all very passionate about what we do, right through to the Department of Agriculture, the Minister for Agriculture, would expect us to keep our doors open. We are not going to leave any animal behind. So we've, we have, I don't know if you can still hear me.
Yep, go ahead. Yes, listening intently.
All good.
Yep.
So it's just that what's happened then is that we decided to keep our doors open, but our kennels are full. We have just north of, on the Mountain Road, just north of Letterkenny, we have one of our animal welfare centres run by Denise McCausland, and she is our national head of animal welfare. It's full, and our other three centres in Longford, Mallow, and in Wicklow are full as well, Greg. So we've had to resort to hiring private kenneling. Now, that under normal circumstances could be a small bill that we would be happy to put up with in terms of just a normal, you know, overflow and a temporary overflow. What's happened is that it really has had to be structured into our whole operation for the year, to the point where if it continues, as I said, we're doubling in terms of numbers for this year. We're way over capacity and we're paying for this every night. And we're looking at about $500,000 of a deficit, which even though we're the largest animal welfare organisation in Ireland, we couldn't sustain and we couldn't absorb anything like that. So we've been left with no alternative but to launch this national appeal to be able to address the situation, get through 2023 and into 2024.
So what has led to this increase then in animals being surrendered or instances of animal cruelty? Because, I mean, this is a huge spike. Do we know what's causing it?
Yeah, it's really related to COVID and post-pandemic. It's what we're witnessing. Everybody would remember that during pandemic, people were at home. The families were at home. It was a great time to take an animal. If you're thinking of taking a pet animal in, it was the time to do it, and particularly a dog. So there was a significant growth in terms of breeders, be them legal or illegal, during that time. And people were able to, anecdotal evidence of prices tripling and quadrupling. And, you know, so it was a case, there was a very significant growth in the demand and the supply of dogs during that time. The minute pandemic was over, practically overnight, that market disappeared. So what we're seeing in the ISPCA is a very significant increase in puppy farms that are not able to cope. And so they're left in a situation where animals are being neglected. And a small example, we're full, we're doubling our numbers. We have extensive private rental, but about 2 weeks ago, we got a call into our call centre in Longford, where a neighbour effectively complained about the noises of dogs. It could be harmless. It could just be, barking dogs, which really wouldn't be a cruelty situation. But our inspector inspected and found in a small garage, 116 dogs sitting in crates with no food, no light, it was the most horrendous sight. Now, we're full, as I said, but we are determined not to leave any animal behind. So a national operation headed by Denise in Donegal worked our way into bringing all the animals from that location, which was further down the country, back out to our centres and back into private kennelling and back to safety. So that's the extent of the problem. And as I said, it's breeders. On top of that, there's a second problem. And it is an issue in the sense that people have now gone back to work and they're A significant part of our work is to rescue, to rehabilitate, and to rehome. And the rehoming piece is a key part of the outcome, because that's the terrific success for us. We bring an animal back to full health, and their loving home, a forever home, is ultimately where it has to go. That, those numbers of people who are prepared to take dogs in because they go back to the office has gone down significantly. So we have this increase in terms of the cruelty cases coming through, and we also have a reduction in terms of people bringing them in.
And
so our plan, and Cyril, is to get through the years.
I get you, but I mean, listen, we're at full employment, so there's less people at home, of course. And there's more animals coming into the ISPCA's care than can be rehomed. But, I mean, obviously, hopefully Stop the Pain is very successful and you have more money. But that is to house these dogs. You can't do that, presumably, in perpetuity. So what is the medium to long term if the situation persists? What happens to these pets? Because you can't run at overcapacity forevermore either. So what happens, Cyril? What's next?
So, excellent point, Greg. You know, our plan, as I said, to get through this is a simple one, but we're hoping it would be an effective one. As I said, temporary kenneling, you know, we're going to take every animal into safety. Obviously, our veterinary costs, our veterinary services have to increase to meet that demand, and that's a significant cost as well during the year. We also are going to build kennels in our centres so that we can expand capacity and take animals out of private care. But the final piece, as you just asked there, is to, you know, really as part of this appeal is to ask for people to step forward and to take an animal in. If they're not sure, you know, if they're saying, well, I'm not sure, you know, will I be able to take care of it? I'm now working or whatever. They can foster. And even an animal getting 3 or 4 weeks or maybe 2 months in a home, in a fostered home, it's a significant benefit to that animal for us in terms of its rehab. So if people are not sure, we'd be delighted to hear from them. They can call us on 043-33-25035, which is our National Animal Centre line into Longford, or they can go on our website and register interest in fostering or adopting, which would be terrific. But you're right, we have to ask Irish public to, you know, temporarily, ispca.ie/donate, you know, to help us get through this immediate spike and immediate problem in 2023. And then for people who are animal lovers who are considering it, we will work really hard with them to make it a success and to get animals back into homes.
The ISPCA would not move animals abroad or put animals to sleep, dogs. That's not part of the policy.
Well, we haven't sent animals abroad as of yet, but there are a number of very good options that we will have, you know, consider. And, you know, it's a case that we want animals to have a full and happy life, and that's what we're targeting. But no, animals are not put to sleep. Obviously, if there's a medical issue or some other matter that requires it, that our veterinary professionals tell us, that's it. But under no circumstances, we are going to save every animal. We're not leaving any animal behind. And we want the folk of Donegal and the Northwest and all of Ireland really to step forward and to help us through this.
And very finally,
you know, our strength.
Sorry, just very finally, yes, Cyril, I don't want to take up too much of your time. But the question has actually completely escaped me at the moment, so I think I've concluded with your time. Cyril, sorry, it's come to me. Locally, we've had calls in the past for dog ownership to be more heavily regulated. You know, that our attitude towards it, it's almost like fast fashion. You get it, and then, it doesn't suit me, you can give it. Is there anything that the ISPCA would like done in that area to regulate or license in some way dog ownership?
Well, the 1986 Control of Dogs Act, the legislation is there. So responsible ownership is the law. You know, it's not just a nice thing to do to take a dog in or take an animal in and have a pet and then decide, no, I'm not really going to do it. Also, the 2013 Animal Health and Welfare Act, even the simple thing of taking a dog in and say, look, I will go away for the weekend and leave food out in the garden. You're breaking the law. You know, you have to make sure that you provide adequate facilities and adequate food for the animals. So the law is definitely there, and it's a case that you know, we are as inspectors or inspectors, ISPCA inspectors who go out and inspect this. We are very successful in terms of our court cases and our sanctions. But obviously, the ones that we bring to court is by 26 to 30 a year are serious cruelty cases. They're very serious cruelty cases. There is a interdepartmental group, which the government formed recently, which is looking at the control of dogs, particularly after the very serious attack on a young teenager in Wexford. and the impact that it had. So from an ISPCA point of view, we believe that it's the responsible ownership is the piece. The animal is not the issue. You know, it's a case that if you are a responsible owner, an animal will never attack, and you'll make sure you have it complying with the law in terms of the length of the lead or a muzzle or whatever. So those things are very important. But can I just say one final thing, Greg? I know you want to move on, but just finally, our strength and our support have come from our supporters across the years, you know, where people have donated to help us save animals and have saved a significant number of animals. This is a national appeal. This is, you know, we haven't done this before. This is an exceptional situation that we're in. So we're looking for that support from our existing supporters, from animal lovers and the Irish public generally to get us through 2023 into 2024. Just to make that point, ispca.ie/donate. This is not just a nice thing to do. It's a crucial thing for the ISPCA.
Yeah, and it's an emergency. All right, Cyril, thank you very much indeed for your time. Dr. Cyril Sullivan, CEO of the ISPCA. All right, next guest on the way. And in studio with me now is Fiona Condren, founder of Emotions Matters. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Greg.
You're going to have to move forward a little bit for me just so I can hear you. I'm good. How are you?
I am good.
Very good. Okay. So we're talking about the mental health of children and the importance of that. And I suppose it's recognising areas that need some attention. And we've known from recent statistics, Fiona, that we're seeing more children with mental health issues than ever before, more instances of self-harm. And it frustrates me a little bit that we seem to recognise the issues, but we don't really talk about the cause, or no one's prepared to nail their flag to the mast on that, or what we actually can do to improve things. So what's your views on all of that?
Well, I think you're spot on, Craig, in what you're saying. We have seen a massive increase, and we have a mental health crisis now on the ground at the moment. So what I would often say is that mental health amongst our children has reached never before seen levels. So we've never seen anything like this. Anxiety and depression is widespread and worrying, and self-harming and suicide is rising at alarming rates. So I suppose what that tells us is our children are struggling. And, you know, the recent studies would indicate that. So we have a study that was undertaken of secondary school age pupils down south in the Republic, here in the Republic of Ireland. And what that concluded was 78% of pupils reported having experienced a mental health condition. Mm-hmm. And what we also know from a recent report from Action for Children is that 1 in 5 children now from the age of 5 to 16 are likely to present with a mental health condition. Mm-hmm. That's 50% rise in the last 3 years. And our children who are age 17 to 19, that has gone up from 1 in 6 to 1 in 4. Mm-hmm. So they're very clearly telling us themselves that they are struggling, and we are seeing that very clearly.
Yeah, but we've never been in a situation before where we've talked more about a young person's mental health. Mm-hmm. You go into a school, you'll see all the signs on the walls, opportunities to speak and all that there. So whatever we're doing now is not working, or in fact, it might actually be nurturing the mental health issues. I would like us to have that conversation, because I find that it sort of gets dragged into other areas when you try and have that conversation. And we're all in the business of looking after children, but I think we need to have a grown-up conversation about, you know, the space that we provide for children and how we support them.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on. There's a lot of papering over the cracks, in terms of the statistics, and I like to be very open and honest so that people know what is actually happening.
I just feel that when I was younger, if I went to my parents, right, and I said, this is how I'm feeling, that I would, or school, that I would get something constructive or some guidance. Everything seems so hands-off now with young people. It's like, well, what do you feel? Why do you feel like that? What do you think might be better for you? Do you know what I mean? I just think we're losing the art of caring.
Yeah. And I suppose, why is the statistics, why are we seeing these on the ground?
Could you just bear with me for one second, Fiona? Oisin, I think there's a setting on that microphone. Could you fix it for me? Listen, we could put all the airs and graces on. I think it's switched to the wrong setting, and I'm struggling a little to hear Fiona there. Is it, Osh? No, is it, everything's okay? Shall we swing mic three over? Okay. Because it's an important message, Fiona, and you can shift over a little bit because I want to make sure that we can hear you. That mic's just a little bit quiet. Right, sorry. Continue there. Oh, loud and clear.
So, yeah. Thanks, so Osh. I think a good way of understanding why the children are struggling is they tell us themselves. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned in those reports, what a lot of young people are indicating is that they're struggling with school. They are struggling with their exams, friendships. There has been an increase in children struggling with the cost of living crisis, worrying about, you know, the family's financial situation and how that's going to impact on. Social media has a big impact on children as well too. And COVID, when we look at a 50% rise over the past 3 years, then COVID has played a huge role in that. It's played a huge role in the mental health of the population as a whole, but particularly our children as well too. So let me explain, Craig, when you kind of asked me there, how has that played out during COVID, okay? So during COVID, children became very disconnected. They were no longer going to school. They weren't in contact with their friends. They weren't in contact with their extended family and whatever. During a time of crisis, children look to us, they're big people, to see how are we coping, and they imitate that, okay? So through no fault of parents' own, when COVID kicked in, we were all scared, panicky. We never dealt with a situation like that. So that we were scared, anxious, panicky, fearful. So we've dysregulated parents and we've dysregulated children. What I often say is our children are our mirrors. They're a reflection of our inner state of being. So when children are dysregulated, they are in fight or flight mode. They are in stress response. What do they need at that time? They need emotional, human, relational contact, connection with their big people. But if their parents during that time were also dysregulated, then they're disconnected from their children. They're not able to provide them with that kind of safety to help to knock that alarm off and give them some emotional rest, okay? So what we've seen was a lot of children living in fear during that time. And fear doesn't grow a healthy brain, okay? What also kind of happened is when children are dysregulated, when they're in fight or flight mode, they cannot come to us and say, this is how I'm feeling, this is why I'm feeling like that, this is the impact it's having on me. Why can they not do that? Because they've underdeveloped brains. What age, Craig, do children's brains grow at?
All their age till the 21, I would have
thought. For girls, it's 25. For boys, it's 27. Mm. So what does that mean? That means that they haven't mastered the skill of emotional regulation. They're not able to cope with their big emotions, remain calm, and adapt and respond appropriately to it.
Yeah.
So it's us, the big people, that are doing that.
Yeah, but
for
I get
them.
You. I get exactly what you're saying, and you're right, and you're the professional as it relates to the impact, say, COVID would have. Mm-hmm. But broadening that out, Fiona. Right. You will see out there now that parents mollycoddle the children. Do you know what I mean? We protect them from absolutely everything. You've got 18, 19, 20-year-olds living under the roofs being treated as like they're 14. We've got students heading off to college that don't know a handle of a saucepan from a sieve. Do you know what I mean? Like it's rather than just the major things that I think that have amplified it, like COVID, as you mentioned. Are we just not raising our children a little bit different now that is not preparing them for the tough realities of life that come at you very quick?
What we know for now, Craig, from the science of child development, it is gifted as the answer as to how we raise emotionally intelligent children. Mm-hmm. Children are emotionally intelligent children are children who know what they're feeling, why they're feeling
Understood,
it impacts them and what they can do about it to help themselves feel better. Mm. These are the children who thrive in life and go into adulthood and thrive, okay? Mm-hmm. So they have gifted as the answer. How do we do that? That all comes down to how we grow them a brain, okay? Mm-hmm. And it means growing them. How do we grow them a brain that allows them to do that? It's been them trusting us to be able to invite us in to help them to feel safe in that provision of our care, okay? So have not been taught within our society. We've all gone out to school, we've all learned IQ, but we've not been taught EQ. We've not been taught how to manage your emotions in healthy ways, okay?
Yes.
So when we're not taught how to manage. Not only were we not taught how to manage our emotions in healthy ways, emotions in our society were also seen as bad and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see them, we don't want to hear them. So when we see emotions in our children outside of what we deem to be good, we shut them down, we dismiss them, we do, as you say, rescue and fix, jump in, mollycoddle them, try and make them better, or we punish them, mm-hmm. okay? So what that leads to is the stuffing down of emotions rather than the release of emotions.
I get you.
If I can just finish this, because this is really important.
Yeah.
That leads to the stuffing down of emotions rather than the release of emotions. Mm-hmm. Then what happens is that we know those emotions just don't go away. Mm-hmm. They stay buried alive and they come out in two ways, through anger and aggression, or they turn inwards through the manifestation of anxiety, depression, self-harming, suicide and addiction. Hence why we've got a pandemic on the ground at the minute in relation to our adult population around violence, crime, mental health and addiction and all of that. So if we now want to raise emotionally intelligent children, children who are able to cope with their big emotions, mm-hmm. reduce the likelihood of mental health and all of that kind of stuff, then in order to do that, then we have to learn to become emotionally intelligent ourselves.
That's exactly where I was going to go, you see, because I know as a parent, okay, sometimes you feel that if you're too tough, and I don't mean tough in any physical mm-hmm. sense, but if you're too emotionally tough on your child, we've been conditioned to think, mm-hmm. right, if they go off to the room and disappear for 2 hours, mm-hmm. are they contemplating self-harm? Mm-hmm. Or if they storm out of the house, have they gone to mm-hmm. kill themselves? Mm-hmm. Right, I'm going to use the frank language because that's it. We now are so fearful. We, as adults, many of us lack the emotional intelligence to mm-hmm. hand that down. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I think this started some time back, and people that were weren't emotionally intelligent are now the parents. So, mm-hmm. you know, what? How do we then make sure we mature emotionally ourselves?
Well, that's where we use now the scientific up-to-date research, which teaches us that in order to raise emotionally intelligent children, the work starts with us. We have a tendency when children are presenting with big emotions and behaviour, we send them out to counselling. It's the work begins with us, the big people. We need to learn how to manage. Children learn in three ways. So we're developing. You know, when I says to you about their brain growing every day, well, what's it growing? Emotional regulation, impulse control, empathy, critical and logical thinking, the ability to make decisions. That's what we're wiring up every single day, and that takes decades to do that. But if we weren't taught how to do that, then we need to go back and learn that. We need to learn to cope with our big emotions, and we need to learn to respond to their big emotions and behaviours using emotional intelligence, not fear, not being harsh and critical. Because if we're harsh and critical to our children, then when they're struggling, they don't want to lean in and rest and the provision of an explosive bomb. Mm-hmm. If we're a jellyfish parent, if we're wobbly wobbly, fearful, panicky, are they going to do this, are they going to do that, then when our children are struggling, they're not going to want to lean in because they fall flat in their face. Mm-hmm. So what we want is to raise children now who feel safe being able to lean in and rest and that provision of our care. And we do that by growing ourselves so we can grow them in the best possible mm-hmm. way. We are teaching them every single day to master those skills in terms of growing their brain, the same way as we send them out to school. We wouldn't expect them to do a GCSE at the age of 7. Why? Because they haven't mastered these skills. So why do we expect them to be able to cope with their big emotions when they're 9, 10 and 13, when they fully don't develop until they're in their mid-20s?
Yeah, but 20s? We are seeing, but I think there's an expectation of young people to maturing earlier as mm-hmm. well too. Do you know what I mean? And that's a societal thing.
Mm-hmm. We're rushing them along in terms of their development.
Oh, 100%.
And they are not developmentally able to do that.
But they're being exposed to all the horrors of real life, say through social mm-hmm. media, for example, when they're literally mm-hmm. should be, you know, playing outside.
Yeah.
But how then do we, because the reality of life then is that we're all in a cost of living crisis, particularly mm-hmm. here in the Northwest, you know, lowest wages, lowest disposable income, thousands upon thousands of us living in homes that you can't pretend the cracks aren't there. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal with all of that sort ourselves out and then start working on the emotional intelligence of our children. It's overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah. And I suppose when I look back at my early years of parenting, I was 19 when I had my first daughter, who's now 26. I didn't really have a clue when I reflect back on it. I had an underdeveloped brain myself. Mm. I couldn't cope with my emotions. And I came to the table with my own story and my own stuff as well too, which we mirror onto your children then as well, okay? So I suppose it's really important that I have a wee middle daughter who is 17. She's significantly disabled with a life-limited condition. So when I went in to have her, Craig, she was my second wee daughter. My other wee child was coming in to tween years. At that stage in their development, what we also know is that during adolescence, not only is their brain underdeveloped, they're also going through a period of construction. So 40% of their neural connections is being primed while the brain reorganises itself. What does that mean? A lot of times they feel very out of control within themselves. So they need us, they need that relationship to help them to feel safe. Well, when I brought my wee daughter back home that was significantly disabled, I was very much in fight or flight, dysregulated myself. The same as some parents who are dealing with lots of other challenges in the home as well too. And when we're disconnected from ourselves and we're in stress response, then we can't give our children what it is that they need. So when those needs are not met in the relationship with us, they get those met outside of the home. And that's what that looked like for my daughter. Her needs then, she dropped out of grammar school and it created a lot of problems for her then in teenage years, okay? So how now do we move forward with that? Mm. Where shit's always going to come to us. Mm. We are always going to be dealing with challenges and stresses and all that kind of stuff. But it's really down to us now. My wee daughter that's significantly disabled, her condition hasn't magically got better. If anything, it's got worse. But as over the years, I've learned to manage my emotions. Mm-hmm. I've learned to self-regulate. And I have learned now to deal with my teenage daughter and respond to her behaviours using emotional intelligence.
And they pick that up too as well.
I am not parenting no more out of fear. So this all comes down to us educating ourselves and using this knowledge and information. We have got into a way within our society of seeing children's behaviour through the lenses of morality, what's right and what's wrong, and not through the lenses of child development. So when we are making children wrong for engaging in what they should be doing, children are supposed to be chaotic, messy, challenging all over the place. They're supposed to make mistakes and get things wrong. But if we are constantly coming at them, criticising, judging them, shaming them, doing all the fear-based traditional behavioural approaches that we were taught to use, then we are growing their brain every day. That the message that we communicate to them every day, that you're bad, you've done something wrong, you're not good enough, that message over time becomes a belief. Mm. That becomes cemented in their soul.
And it stays with you for life.
And over 20 odd years, that then becomes their blueprint. We're sending them out the door then where they don't feel good enough within themselves. And when they don't feel good enough within themselves, they're always going to look to the outside to help themselves to feel better.
Okay, right. There is an online masterclass coming up on the 14th of June where you're going to give people tips to manage. And I suppose, too, we're going to be spending more time with each other over the summer, aren't we? Okay, so maybe it's a great opportunity to work on things.
Yeah.
Not a challenge. I mean, it could be challenging, but it's an opportunity to immerse yourself in this process. So how do people get involved in this masterclass to, I suppose, fix themselves and fix their young people? Yeah. Well, fix is not really the right way to say it, but work on themselves.
I suppose the masterclass is really only a snippet of teaching you how to deal with your children's meltdowns and a way where we use relationship and connection. I suppose the bigger kind of picture is I run a program called Parenting with Love and Limits Without Losing It. So that's a really more in-depth program which teaches parents to be able to self-regulate, and it teaches them then to be able to co-regulate their children using emotional intelligence. So if any parent wants to avail of my training, then they can follow me on social media, Fiona Condren, Emotion Matters. I have got in the process of getting a website developed now that should be up and running next week. So that'll be available there as well too. But I suppose, you know, what I would always encourage parents, Craig, is that it's really best to get this information and knowledge in from a preventative point.
Just finally, right, in terms of, say, for instance, we were all parenting perfectly, which is impossible. What is the one thing, do you think, in a sort of school going children's age that needs to change, you know, societal wise? Do you know what I mean? So rather than us constantly trying to keep the lid on the pot or playing whack-a-mole, do you see one thing of significance that's triggering a lot of the problems in younger people?
I suppose, as I say, we're now raising children in such a fast-paced technological world as well too, and that brings with it an awful lot of challenges, you know. So with children growing and developing, you know, they're growing up.
Are we bombarded with too much information? Say, for instance, a big topic at the moment, and we're not going to get into it, and I don't want to debate in it or to put you in it, but there's a big conversation at the moment about gender and identity and what have you. Are the children too young to cope with that in your mind, as well as everything else, the other challenges of the world? Like, I don't want to paint you into a pro this or the anti that. That's not my motivation. But it's just a topical conversation at the moment. Do you have concerns that that's too much for them to take on?
I think children are being exposed to an awful lot of outside the gender thing. With technology at their fingertips, they're being exposed to an awful lot of information at a very young age.
Information overload almost.
Overload, you know, when they've got an underdeveloped brain and they're not able to have the capacity to be able to kind of manage that as well. And we're seeing that on social media with bullying. People can be very negative. There can be a lot of judgment, a lot of body image issues and all that kind of stuff as well too. So there is, but I suppose the bottom line is, Craig, is that our children are struggling at the minute. When they're struggling, they need their big people. They need to be able to come to them when they're struggling.
Well, they'll get it
and
elsewhere,
if we're harsh and critical, they're not going to come to us. And when we're parenting out of fear, they're not going to come to us. So the key here is really equipping parents to be able to be the type of big person that they want their children to be. But what I can also say as well too is that children spend a lot of times in school, and it's important at the minute. There's a lot of children struggling within school as well with emotions, behaviours and mental health, and it's how do we support, you know, education, schools and educational professionals to be able to achieve best outcomes in the midst of this kind of crisis as well too. And the approaches that I would teach support behavioural regulation in children by using moments of high emotional distress to be able to teach and coach and guide them, to be able to calm down, self-soothe and self-regulate. So it's really important we provide this training, not just to parents, but also to teachers.
But should this not be happening in schools as well, you know, I think? And we can't medicate and bury our heads in the sand and think, this is going away, because it's not. We have to meet, the big people have to meet head on. Fiona Condren, you can search Fiona Condren, Emotions Matter, if you want more information and details too on that upcoming masterclass, but the wider programme there as well. Fiona, thank you very much for calling in. It's great to have you back on the show again, and we'll chat to you again soon. Okay, take care.
Thank you.
We'll be getting some live music on the way very shortly. Stay right where you are. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Over my left shoulder, it's a proud parent. You can see him there. He doesn't think it's on camera, but he is. But we have primarily, there's no point leaving now. You've already made the shot. Stay where you are. We have in studio with us a four-piece Irish indie rock band. They are the Aphades. Good morning. Great to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Hello.
We're speaking, I'll just introduce you actually. We've got 15 and 16-year-olds Cahir and Grace. And there's two Graces, a Grace Murphy and a Grace Nugent, and Kyle Warner. All of you, very welcome back onto the 9th Lunar Show.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Right, so talk to us about this new single.
I mean, it came out how many weeks ago now?
19th
Yeah, so it's been out, like, I'd say 2 weeks-ish, kind of.
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks.
And do you guys feel you have found your spot now? You know, because you're a young band, but you have been together for a bit. Do you think you've found your voice now? Do you like where you are at?
Yeah, we feel like we've definitely improved, like, greatly from where we started.
Crazy.
Like, even writing songs, you kind of just find your way a little bit more, like in actually what you want to play live and what you want to kind of sound like. So
we're always changing, like, but it's nice, like, you know what I mean, we're kind of getting into a groove a wee bit more, like.
And you're sir building up your audience as well organically too, isn't it? It's about getting the music into people's ears and then getting them to the shows when you perform live.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, we just want it to reach as many people as possible, Like,
well, that's it. Yeah, we believe in the music, so we're thinking now, just when we're releasing the song, we want that as many people to hear it as possible, and then if they like it, they like it.
Yeah, now you've gigs upcoming in Dublin and Belfast. What's that like? Is that nerve-wracking? Is it exciting? Are you outside your comfort zone, or is this what you've all been waiting to do, or what?
I mean, it's all just like new experiences for us, and that's just what we're kind of welcoming. Like,
would you enjoy it? Because, you see, here's a little bit of advice. When you're old like me... What are you laughing at?
Sorry.
When you're old like... This is where someone jumps in. When you're old like me and you haven't done much, you know, you can't go back. So now's the time
exactly.
to do it all.
Like, it's great just being like a local band. Like, we love the Letterkenny scene and it's been great for us. But, you know, we can't...
The natural progression is to play to a bigger audience, isn't
like,
it?
That's the goal.
Yeah. And there's different types of people that, you know, you could blow up in Dublin or Belfast. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You just never know. That's the exciting thing. What about the traction online, the ability to get your stuff online? I say this quite a lot to bands, but I think it's such an important part of growing nowadays, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be able to get your own stuff on Spotify.
Get it out there, yeah. No, so we actually recorded and done everything for the song ourselves.
Yeah.
So I have a bit of a... recording studio up in the house and done a few days recording and then I mix it all myself.
Like, you just get a breakdown of where people are listening to, aren't you? Where your tracks are being streamed. So you're getting streams from all over the world as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, what was our stats like?
Yeah, well, we're doing fairly well on Spotify now. Like, you know, getting it out there, it was a bit of a challenge, but we got it. And it's cool seeing we've streams in Germany.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. I would love that. So there's someone in Germany listening to this track. It's brilliant, isn't
it's
it? Like,
mind-blowing. Yeah. It's kind of even hard to believe.
Well,
like,
the world's shrinking for you. So,
exactly,
you know, and there's a funny thing, I think particularly from the Northwest, our music seems to travel really well to Germany and particularly the Netherlands. You know, there's a lot of acts around here that go and do gigs over the summers over there, whatever it is anyway. Okay, right. So we're going to hear Only Child, is it?
Yeah.
Right. It's out now, which means it's available to stream. Did you do a video for this or you're focusing just on the audio streaming of it? What's the story?
So the video is still in the works.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, excellent. Okay.
And
shall we'll talk about gigs? What's coming up? We talked about the gigs coming up in Dublin, Belfast. How's the summer looking for you? Where are you playing? And
Party in the Park.
Party in the Park. Pretty good one. Yeah, we're doing that again. A bit further up the building.
Yeah, I think we're branching out to Derry now as well.
Great stuff.
July.
And what I would love to see, because I would be at a few different events around the county. Yeah, not many, but not as many as I'd like. And sometimes you have periods where there is a crowd, right? There's no band on stage and they're playing out music out of the speakers and people are wondering, when's the live music going to start? I would love to see organisers and promoters get bands like yourselves or others, if you should be up for that, get yous up on stage before the main show starts, because the audience are there, they're mad for music, and it gives yous an opportunity to play to another audience.
Yeah,
do you know
exactly
what I mean? And make a few quid at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, I do really think that they do amazing stuff, but I think sometimes we're missing a trick there. You know what I mean? That there's brilliant stage time to get yous up there in front of a crowd and others.
Yeah.
So we'd love to see more of that in the summer. Right, okay. Only Child, who wrote it? Whose
group
fault
effort.
Is it? And how many joking?
I kind of came with the chords and a few of the lyrics and brought it to the band, and then this whole sort of bridge thing then came out whenever we started playing it together, and it really made the song.
Cool.
Like, so
it's a collaborative effort, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Everything.
All right. Okay. Well, sure. Listen, whenever you're ready, give us a lash. This is Only Child from the brilliant F-Aids.
You've been calling to me when you say you can't sleep. I don't see purpose of my presence in your futile weeks. And I know, you've not got it, he say, but I've not slept in a week. And it's driving me crazy. I've been crawling through this space called my mind. You are always the one just crashing behind. Fine, I've been crawling through
this space called my mind. You are always the one just crashing behind. Why must you come to me when you're in denial? You know it's not my fault that you're a lonely, only child.
Yay, well done. That's the Aphades and Only Child. And what you've always managed to do, and I don't know if it's how you record it or how you play live, but you really do a great job of recreating the recorded version.
Yeah,
live.
we've never done that song acoustically, really.
Yeah, sounds good.
We know it inside out.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Right, that's the Aphades. When are you playing locally again? You talked about the Party in the Park. Mm. Is that coming up?
7th July.
7th of July, okay. So hopefully plenty of gigs between now and then. And we wish you continued success. Do you have any influences musically?
We were speaking about this.
Yeah, we were actually speaking about this in the car.
Because you knew it was going to come up.
And we all, for our instruments, we all take very different influences, which I think makes a pretty unique sound.
It's pretty cool.
For the band, I think,
Is there a Wet Leg vibe there, no?
Maybe.
Some of us love Wet Leg.
Yeah, there's just a vibe. Like, it's your own people, but there's sort of the lyrics and.
Yeah, it might just be the Two Boys, Two Girls. Is it Two Boys, Two Girls?
Is it Two? I've never seen The Boys.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I did. You're right. Okay, listen, come here. Hopefully, it's Letterkenny this year, Glastonbury next year. Why not? But as I say, I'd just love to see you guys, you know, get the stage that you deserve more than you are, especially locally. But you'll go down a storm in Dublin and Belfast. You can check out the Aphades on Spotify and also on their social medias, of course, and a video for that coming up as well too. So you get a second band. See if you get to pull that off. All right, thanks very much. The two Graces, Cahir and Kyle, and the parent managers as well. In the we appreciate you calling in, and thank you so very much indeed. All right, we'll be back with our final segment after the break. What a great job we have to be able to firstly listen live to great young talent like the Aphades, and talent of all ages. But also to give them a wee platform as well. Fantastic stuff. Right, okay. Now, let's see, can we help Pauline? Hi, Pauline.
Hi, Greg.
Nice to speak to you. Right, okay.
And you?
Missing passport, is that it? What's happened?
Yeah, well, it's my 21-year-old son. We're all members in Greencastle. I live in Greencastle. Went out to play golf. It's open week down there, and he had just arrived back from university. And he had the passport in his coat pocket, and he took the coat off to go out and play at 5 o'clock yesterday evening. And when he came back in, the coat's gone.
Right.
Now he had his passport in the pocket. I think somebody has, because the locker rooms have just reopened the day before, and he had left. So people are coming in with their golf bags for the first time, and I'm thinking somebody has gathered it up and just stuffed it into the golf bag, or somebody has, you know, while they're getting changed, lifted it by mistake, which happens.
Yeah, it happens all the time. I'm sure it's been lifted by mistake. So if you found a black-faced North jacket, if you took it by accident, there's a passport in it. But also, and I think, Pauline, you make a great point, maybe you just stuffed it into the big pocket in the bag. If you're listening, please double-check the pocket of your bag to make sure that the black North Face jacket, but most importantly, the passport, isn't in it, because your young 20-year-old, one-year-old fellow is heading away very shortly and needs that passport.
Yeah, he's flying out. He's flying to England on Tuesday and then to Turkey on Wednesday. It's a trip that he has planned with his girlfriend and her family from last October, and he's absolutely, he couldn't speak on the phone. He's absolutely devastated.
He's up to high dough. Yeah, this is
really is.
And listen, we know it's been lifted by mistake from Greencastle Golf Club. We just appeal to anyone. And what day was out golfing again? Sorry, Pauline.
It was just yesterday
okay,
evening at 5 o'clock.
Right, so if you were in there, so we know the timeline. So in Greencastle Golf Club, after five o'clock yesterday, please double-check your bag or your car for a black, because they're very popular, especially in the golfing fraternity. So someone's lifted it thinking it's theirs, or they've lifted it thinking their mates left it behind. It's got a passport in it. It's out there. We just need to make sure the right ears have heard this. I'll stick it up on my social media as well, Pauline, and we'll put it up on,
fantastic.
Highland stuff, and we have to make this trip happen for this.
Because we've tried to get an emergency appointment. We can't get anything down in Dublin.
Yeah.
So we're really, really hoping that somebody comes across it in their golf bag or in the bit of the car where they've just gathered everything and thrown it in.
All right, okay. So collectively...
appeal to everybody.
And we want collectively people out there. St. Anthony, you know yourself. We need this young fella to get his passport. But as I say, if you were at yesterday evening, a real specific timeline, at Greencastle Golf Club, please double-check you didn't accidentally lift a North Face jacket. Within it, a passport, and it's a, it sounds like it's going to be a great holiday for him. Listen, fingers crossed, Pauline. Fingers crossed.
Thank you.
But
thank
we'll
you
get
so
it up on the socials as well and hopefully get people to share. And let us know if there's any success, will you please?
I will indeed. Okay. I will indeed. That's fantastic.
Right.
Brilliant.
Okay. Take care of yourself. All right. Bye bye. Thank you very much indeed.
All
take
the
care.
Best.
All right. You too. All right. Some comments to take us up to the top of the hour here. Excellent band and sound from the Fades. Singer's voice is fabulous. Yes, she's got, and it's effortless. You know when someone sings and they have to sort of, or they appear that they're banging it out. It's effortless for her. Love the talent on our doorstep. Hope they go far. What they need is just the right break, the right support. And I've heard them a few times and I've no doubt that they can make it. Because as well as that being fantastic musicians and artists, is they are four lovely young people as well. Hugh in Creaslaw says, the Fades are just fantastic. Here, Hugh, I agree. Another person agreeing with me. Hi, Greg. I agree. I'm in my mid-60s and was treated as an adult from I was 16, working in a full-time job. Young adults are not allowed now to grow up. And we do it, I think, some of us do it in the name of love, to protect. But sometimes I wonder, do we have to make sure that we're not wrapping them up in cotton wool and holding them back rather than helping them progress? Any comments on that? 086 60 25,000. We'll pick them up for the morning, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. But that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you very much for those of you who listened to the show, those of you who've watched the show. We're back tomorrow morning, Friday, with a Friday panel discussing all the big stories of the week. And we'll have the entertainment slot and so much more besides. So stay tuned for that. Thank you very much to Karen and all who researched and produced, and Niamh working hard on the show as well.